You may have noticed that there's a bunny on the altar. Not just a pagan symbol of spring, but at the end of Buddha's birthday on last Sunday, one of our smaller participants, Aaron's daughter Anya, came to me with an offering for the Buddha that was carefully wrapped in paper towel with a little ribbon glued around the outside of that. And so we just set it respectfully on the altar. And then later, the Buddha and I opened it up, and there was this, probably from a magazine, that she had carefully covered with stickers. There's a mouse sticker, and there's a pot of gold sticker, and then she's got a hat and got jewels. And I was very moved by this offering to the Buddha from a four-year-old, whose mother's been reading her Buddha stories and got her. Perhaps that must have been kind of a got that going, but it was such a sweet gesture. So tell her the bunny is still on the altar. Anyway, tickled my fancy. A little leftovers from Buddha's birthday. And in the same universe where we have beautifully stickered bunnies made as offerings to the Buddha, we have the killing of Osama bin Laden, right on the heels of each other. And we live in the same universe with Osama bin Laden. We always have and we always will. And there were all those photographs in the papers of celebrations, kind of a joyous outpouring, along with there's a sense of relief and so forth, and the pundits come in on both sides of that. And I encountered two different friends. One, I went for a walk with a friend who said, what did you think? And when I said I was uncomfortable, there was this palpable sense of relief. She felt she was the only person, she and her partner, they're not Buddhists, they were the only people they knew who were deeply conflicted. And then I was with another friend just on Friday. And we were talking about the sense of celebration and joy and revenge that we saw and a kind of partying atmosphere. And, I oppose capital punishment. And if I were only opposed to it sometimes, I'd have no thing I could call a standard. But if I saw no gray areas, I would be rigid. This is our human dilemma in yet another form. So I affirm restorative justice, but that's a large blanket. And this seemed clearly to be the only way toward that, since there's, those of us who oppose capital punishment usually endorse the fact of prison as an alternative for someone who is convicted of a terrible crime. And that's not an option here, neither as retribution nor as prevention. Because when we send people to prison, it's both. Without killing Osama bin Laden, there would surely be a greater likelihood of further successful mass killings, probably directed particularly against U.S., not the U.S., but people in the U.S. So, but joy, pleasure in any killing, very conflictual, very difficult. So one point that was made in the comments I read, started reading more comments, one of the comments that was made was about the difference between individual ethics and group ethics, saying they're not the same, that they have somewhat different purposes, different values, like group cohesion or individual responsibility. Those are different spheres in a way. But of course, groups and individuals are not separate, not from a Buddhist perspective. You can't say a group does this and an individual does that as though they were somehow separate things. So a lot was said, though, about the positive value of a patriotic expression and a kind of tribal reaffirmation, reinforcing positive social values. Someone made an interesting differentiation between patriotism and nationalism, which they said, from their perspective, that patriotism is love of your country and a positive wanting the people you are like and live with to flourish, whereas nationalism is I'm better than you and I want to put you down. That's an arbitrary way to define them, but there's more than one way to care about your group. They kind of blend into each other very easily. But there are some ways in which group values and individual values are different, except, of course, there's no individual who's not in many groups. You know, the group of two that may live it together, the group of people close to each other, groups. There's no individual apart from groups. We're made of groups, and yet we're individuals. And there are important ways that a group and individual don't have separate values. They're not separate beasts. One of the important shared values is not to have a rigid standard by which you judge everything exactly the same. That we have to have some kind of set standards and nuanced response. Like we vow not to kill. And then we learn to distinguish different forms of killing. So already, as soon as we have something that we say is one way, the same, a vow of not killing, we say, but it's different. It's always different. Every single situation, every incident is different. Every occasion is different. Beef is not all the same beef on your plate. Carrots are not all the same carrots on your plate. A loving spouse performing a mercy killing of a terminally ill partner at their request is different from a random killer, or let alone a purposeful killer. We have many, many shades of difference. Whether we're individual or group, we have to see many, many different shades of or kinds of differences. So I looked back at these ideas of patriotism and the differences of different kinds of killings, the different responses that'll come up, and I looked at relief and revenge and affirming our group tribal identity. And I disagree with that for myself. And I have to recognize that someone else would think that those are correct and appropriate. So somehow, not only do I disagree with myself a lot of the time and have to live in one body, I have to be able to disagree with you and live in the same group. It's difficult. But I thought, I don't want to be merely that. There was a way for me in which a kind of a joyous or glad response reminded me too much of glad responses to the killings of 9/11 that I found so reprehensible. And although we could say it's one thing, so someone else, another pundit weighed in, I think it was actually Maureen Dowd, who said, well, to be pleased at the slaughter of innocents by the thousands is very different from being pleased at the ending the life of the slaughterer, the prime slaughterer, that those are different too. It's always different. No two times are alike. So I spent the whole week being uncomfortable. And, that's what got me thinking about it and keeping on thinking about it. Discomfort isn't all bad. Maybe a lot of suffering has a positive side. First, it alerts us to a problem, then it won't let us forget about it. talked with a couple of people recently who, there's someone I know who's some kind of a body worker, who said her entire successful patient load was made of people who had wounded themselves in meditation. in sitting through too much pain, right? Harmful levels of pain. And on the other side, being able to sit with some discomfort, without denying it, but being able to say, oh, I'm here anyway. The physical case is a lot simpler than the emotional one. You know, there's something to practicing being able to sit with some discomfort physically in the service of something positive that is also about being able to sit in the middle of your life. It is a sitting in the middle of your life. And then when things are hard emotionally, sometimes the body remembers, oh, I know what it's like to stay present. But not by denying or forgetting about discomfort, and not by just ignoring it. So I don't recommend funding that we should need to fund a good body worker's practice by abusing our bodies. And yet, how do we draw a line? So I've talked now several weeks about suffering, its causes, our individual response to it. And I didn't focus on the suffering of being harmed by someone else. Our circumstances are so often beyond our control. Basically, they always are beyond our control. We have input, though. And so sometimes we can change a situation. We cannot control the circumstance coming at us, but we can work with it and something different can happen sometimes. Well, something different does happen, but it may not look very different to us. We don't like that circumstances are beyond our control, and we are very good at changing circumstances. We are very creative creatures. But that's not the same as controlling circumstances. We don't control other people, and we don't control ourselves either. Not really. And yet, we rightly call for self-control. And then we either overdo it or we underdo it, and we go back and forth between the two. This is a lot of that suffering in our lives, this back and forth between want to control ourselves, we don't want to control ourselves. We want to control others, we don't want to control others. We want to control circumstances, we don't want to control circumstances. Our whole life is a little bit of a hot potato. That's the kind of some of the discomfort of being alive, or the suffering at the heart of existence, is that there are ways in which our life is a hot potato because there's always something different happening. We're always made of the world around us, and yet there's always a kind of friction because in a very important, significant ways, there are things outside my skin that are coming toward me. Things inside my body happening I have no control over. It's true that we act as parts of groups. We're social, very social species. We often don't think of it that way. Bees are very social creatures, and ants are very social creatures. And we are a very social species, but because we have such a huge individual self-consciousness, we often don't think of it that way. We think, oh, I don't have a very deep connection to that group. Oh, well, but everyone else in that group thinks you do. That was, for me, this seminal experience was being out in a wilderness in Canada with a group of women on a canoe trip, and being women, we processed. So we were sitting on a rock, all 10 of us one day, talking about our experience as a group. We'd been together 5 or 6 days, I don't know. And each person in the group, each woman going around, was aware of a pretty cohesive group that she was just outside the edge of. Every single one of us had the same experience, that there was a group, a pretty cohesive group, a good one, and that each one, she herself, each of us felt that we were just not really fully part of that group, and everyone else was. And when every one of us had that experience, something really shifted for me. We have this individual awareness of our separateness. And we are. At the same time, we're a deeply social species and we're deeply involved in our groups together. So groups are made of individuals, and individuals are made of groups much more deeply than we like to think, than we are aware of, than we want to take into account, or than we can take into account. But in all of that, if individuals are made of groups and groups are made of individuals, really the place we have to come home to that we are most responsible for is the individual, our individual self, whose values are not separate from the group that, groups that we're part of. But so when I talk mostly about our individual suffering or individual responses to it, how we see ourselves, our delusory ideas, I find it more valuable than inveighing pro or con on group delusion. We have to see group delusion and see where we fall into it. But we're the place where the group starts. Each time. Now, what is the extent of the group we're part of? So the second friend I was talking to last week said he was really uncomfortable with all this this kind of effervescent or joyful response to the killing of Osama bin Laden. And he said, I don't want to be only human. I want to be more than that, he said. I said, for me, it looks different. I want to be fully human, not more than human. We talked about that for a while. I don't want to reduce being human to its lowest common denominator. I don't want to reduce being an American or a member of this species to a low common denominator and leave humanness behind for something else. I want to go in the other direction and make what is being human as large as possible, as inclusive as possible. Which means I have to recognize that I am not different from the people who feel joy at the killing of Osama bin Laden or the people who felt joy at the 9/11 horrific killings. I've talked, this 2 weeks ago, winding my way through suffering down to this idea of a suffering at the center of existence, that where that take, we have to then recognize that that takes place in a whole universe. Our individual life with its suffering and its ease, our values, our pros and our cons, our joys and our sorrows, and ourselves and others and the individual and the group, and all of those switchings back and forth that we do in our minds, and all the warmth and love and all the rage and frustration, they all take place in one universe, one and the same universe, where nothing is in opposition and everything is included. And if this is a very positive view, because it is, if this is the kind of universe we have, then good things will come forth. Because it's already, we're already, that's described, we're already in the Buddha universe, the Buddha world. We are already creatures of Buddha nature. We are already have capacity and a nature of going forward and finding true connection with each other and ourselves and our earth. And then Osama bin Laden's life and his death are also deeply connected to me. We can't have it, some things are included and some things are left out. Because if we do that, we don't have a whole to be informed by, to be part of. And maybe next time we'll be the one left out. At the end of, it was 2 weeks ago, the end of my talk, Angie said, so that means we have to deal right? Remember that? I was struck by that. But yes, as long as we live, we have to deal with all the issues of living and suffering and delusory thinking. We don't get to leave that behind. That comes with being human. I mean, goodness, the only thing worse than having two different ideas in your head would be only having one. It really would be worse. So there will always be morally ambiguous events. And so we have to consider, what does it mean to deal? You know, if dealing means meeting something on its terms, I don't think so. Because that means meeting murderous rage with murderous rage. It means hitting, you know, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. It means revenge and tit for tat. It means responding on the level that someone's coming at you with. That's sort of moving to the lowest common denominator. We don't want to do that. We don't need to do that. But what does it mean to deal? It doesn't mean, the most important, this is the wonderful thing of Buddhist negatives, it doesn't mean meeting things just on their own terms, seeing their terms, but not being reduced to those terms if they are low terms. The response to hate is not to hate. That perpetuates. So how do we take something into account, deal with it, but not perpetuate it if it's something harmful? So what does it mean to deal is an important question for us. And then the other question is how, comes out of that. How do you encounter something where it is and not just be kind of sucked into its terms? We do that all the time when we get reactive. And it's curiously sometimes people we're fond of that we get most reactive with. You know, we find ourselves just barking back at somebody when if we didn't bark back, their bark would have died away. And it isn't necessary to do that. So how do we encounter each event, each phenomenon? How do we deal is not just to manipulate. And that's why I don't really like the word, although it does mean, you know, we have to meet things. But to deal with things tends to turn into turning them into a tool or me into a tool or picking up a tool and smacking them on the head or educating them, dealing with. We tend to turn into objects and turn others into objects. So how? How are we going to deal with the events that we and the people that come up in our lives? How do you keep going inside for a true response and trying to find a truth in the other to respond to? So I love Uchiyama Roshi saying, everything you encounter is your life. You're already here in my life. If I say, go away, well, that's still in my life also. Now I have you and go away, both in my life. Everything we encounter is our life. We're not in here and that's out there. Everything we encounter is our life. And if we take care of what we encounter with the value of how we, of taking care of ourselves or from the place in ourselves we want to respect, there we've got joined the individual and the group in a place where there's a kind of a equality. I won't even treat myself the same in all circumstances. Sometimes I do something that makes me, that's really stinky, and I'm really embarrassed or even ashamed of what I've done. So I'm not going to endorse everything. Just because I do it, it doesn't make it good. Just because you do it, doesn't make it good. But it is my life. So what I do and what you do, where we are connected, where we are involved with each other beyond our knowing. Everything I encounter is my life. Osama bin Laden is in my life forever. For me, the Uchama Roshi's dictum of everything you encounter is your life is what led me to this my idea of how can I be fully human? How can I fulfill what it is to be human? I want not to become something else. To be actually accountable to myself and others for what goes on, what I do and what I don't do. How can I fulfill the mind and heart and body and connections that are what I am and can be? How can I live in terms of being included in the whole universe? Because everything I encounter is part of the same whole universe with me. I keep quoting Master Yunmen because he distilled it so finely to say, medicine and disease cover the earth. Everywhere we look, there's this hot potato going on. Two different views at least going on. At all times. Two different sides, different actions. In me, between us. Medicine and disease are they cover the earth, but then Yunmen went on to say the whole earth is medicine. In a deeper sense, the whole nature of being is to encourage being. And so there is a place for saying what doesn't encourage being is a crime, a deep crime. And of course, my wishing to end someone else's being is also a crime. I will say a smaller crime, a more appropriate crime. But beyond that, the whole earth is medicine calls us to do our best, to find it's possible for us to be larger and deeper and more true to ourselves and each other than we are. And this is medicine, which is to say balm. This is not about a harsh, dry effort. This is not about becoming saint, saints seem to mostly have been very disagreeable people. This is about being human and affirming humanity in ourselves and each other. It's very difficult for us to live awake to this kind of truth because we're so busy going back in our minds between one idea and another, and self and other, and true and false, and like and dislike, and pleasure and frustration. A lot of our practice is not that we get past that happening, but that we're aware that we are not only a matter of this endless dialogue and squabbling between sort of opposing forces in our minds and between us and other people. That whole complicated ball that's endlessly turning and complicated is part of something larger. So medicine and disease cover the earth. The whole earth truly is medicine when we know it and when we don't. But we have this unique human capacity to act as if that weren't so. To act as though only I were human and you aren't. I'm the center of the world. And I will deny that you're all the center of the world too. So I have then the right to kill you or to do harm. So we have this ability to act out of accord with this great truth of life. And we have this great ability to wake up to that and to know and remember in our bodies, in our minds, in our hearts, and in our actions, when one part doesn't, the other part might remember, or those around us, this larger sense of ourselves, remember and remind us that we are larger than the moments, than the dispute of the moment, or any one state of the moment. Whatever one state we're in, that's our personal, partial experience of this moment. It's powerful. It may be very good, it may be very bad, but it is partial, and it takes place in a larger whole, where the whole earth is medicine. It's a hard world to live in, though. So Are you glad Osama bin Laden was killed? How do you feel being glad at someone's death? Does it feel that it was appropriate? Does it feel inappropriate? Does it make you comfortable, uncomfortable? Does revenge have a place in our moral view? What were some of your responses?